Thank you for loving and caring so much about me and our relationship as pastor and congregation. Thank you for trusting me and giving me this time off. Thank you for your kindness and your generosity and your grace. I missed you, all of you, even some I didn't think I would miss. It was a wonderful, restful, rejuvenating time. I stepped away, I unplugged completely from the church and just caught my breath. My spirit rested, my body rested, my mind rested, my family rested. We spent good, long time together, rediscovering why we love each other in the first place. And when it was over, when my travels were done and my long autumnal nap had completed, I was ready to come back and see all of you, see what God was doing, see where God was leading us. Thank you, my friends, truly. I wanted to share one story of my sabbatical with you today, give you a little flavor of my time away. I plan on sharing more in January once we make it through Christmas and Epiphany. In January, I'm going putting together a sermon series called There and Back Again, A Pastor's Tale. Mel will recognize that, of course, as the subtitle of The Hobbit. But we're going to talk a little bit about my travels and ideas and thoughts and things that happened and things that I considered during that time. But I wanted to share one story with you today. The second week of my sabbatical, my family, my wife and I, my daughter and her boyfriend, we went to Denver for a week. I love Denver. It's a beautiful city. We went there for the National Poetry Slam. This was a competition among 40 teams of poets from all over the country, and four teams were international. They were from Australia and Canada, and I believe one was from England. And they'd come together. They'd been competing for a year to that point to get here on the national stage and see who was the best. See who the best teams were, see who the best poets were. It was a very exciting thing. My daughter had participated in poetry and in what's called forensics in high school. When I was in high school, it was called speech. But they did poetry and dramatic readings, and we had helped with that. So my daughter had some experience in that, and so we were excited to go hear some of the best poets. These are our slam poets. These are young, mostly urban. It's a very modern form of poetry that has a strong social justice tilt. These were people who got up and bared their souls in poems about wounds that they had, about mental health, about racism, and about injustice. And it was amazing to hear. There were poems that literally shook me to my soul. Poems that brought tears to my eyes that were just, they were amazing to hear and to be a part of that. The way it worked, the first three nights of the competition, the 40 teams were divided among five venues around the city for two different rounds. And so what we did, rather than trying to make it to all those venues, is we picked one venue to go to so that we'd see all the teams come by in the course of that 3 days. So we picked this little bohemian cafe that was a restaurant in the front, had a stage in the back, and it had food and it had good parking, so that moved it up the list quite a bit for me. So we went to this place the first night. Now, we'd not been there before, so of course we got there early, got a good parking spot. We went in. It was a restaurant, so we ordered some food. We ordered some drinks. We were all excited. We got good seats, right? We went over to the stage. We didn't get right up on the stage, right? You don't want to be like first row, you know. But you don't want to be in the back either, so we got that good middle seating, right, where we could see everything. And we were enjoying our appetizers. And about 15 minutes before the competition was set to start, I noticed one of the guys that seemed to be kind of in charge was going around. He was talking to people in the audience. He came over to us, and he just asked us, "Where are you folks from?" I said, "We're from Kansas City." And he said, "Oh, that's great, that's great." He said, "You know, how'd you hear about the Poetry Slam?" And I said, "You know, my daughter had competed in high school. We knew about the Poetry Slam, found out about this competition, we're excited." He said, you took your vacation just to come and hear this." And I was like, "Yes, we took vacation to come and hear this." He's like, "That's amazing." He goes, "So you don't know any of the teams?" And I was like, "No, we don't know any of the teams." "Excellent," he says. "Do you want to judge?" Sure. Now, when my daughter was in high school, my wife and I had judged some of the forensics competitions. I've judged competitive speech and debate before. But this is, I mean, these are adults. This is a national stage. And this is, I was like, wow, I'm the best you've got here, huh? That's surprising. That's okay. I guess I just expected more, you know, but they said, well, no problem. They said, you know, we try to get judges that don't know the teams, you know, just be honest. They're teaching us how to do it. I said, no problem. And they said, we need one of you to come up on stage because we want to introduce the judges to the competitors so they know in the audience who they're trying to talk to. Okay, so my wife and my daughter say, you go up on stage. So I go up with about five other people, and the MC of the event is up there. And she's got this piece of paper, and she's writing stuff down. She's like, okay, what's your name? I was like, my name's Mark Willis. She goes, okay. She goes, and what do you do? Because something I realized, this crowd that I was amongst at this event weren't necessarily your typical churchgoers. As a matter of fact, there were several poems over the course of the week that we would hear that dealt very specifically with the wounds and the injuries that have been inflicted by organized religion on these individuals and on these groups. And so I was very cognizant of the fact that there were a lot of people who were going to be performing on the stage who would be turned off by the fact that I was a minister. But I'm not a great liar, so I said, well, I'm a minister. And she wrote it down. She's like, okay. And then she was asking each of the judges, just so she could introduce us to the competitors. She said, okay. And she goes, and what qualifies you to judge this event? You know, and in my head, I'm thinking, nothing. Not a thing. But I was like, I got to have a better answer than that, right? I gotta somehow put these folks at ease. So I said, well, you know, I'm a Christian. We're great at judging people. I got to tell you, the competitors laughed at that. They thought that was pretty funny. They thought that was, that kind of put them at ease a little bit. That, oh, okay, he's that kind of minister. All right. But it was an amazing time. We're going to talk more about it in January, just some of the things we got to do. Over the course of the 4 months, my wife and I got to go whale watching in the Atlantic. We saw humpback whales in their feeding grounds. Just 2 weeks ago, I was down in Galveston, Texas. I took my nephews and nieces to a place where we got to pet stingrays. Just amazing. It was an amazing trip. We're going to talk more about that in January. But I specifically chose to return from my sabbatical for this Sunday. This Sunday is the beginning of the Advent season. To me, this marks a point in the church's life, a beginning. This is where our year starts. We start with Advent, the preparation for the coming of the Christ child, the inbreaking of Christ into our reality, the transformation of the divine into the human. This season marks the beginning for us as Christians. Historically, this is where we begin. The Old Testament is great, but this is the moment that we break onto the scene. This is where we burst forth. The coming of Christ is our creation. The season of Advent is the opportunity to prepare for that. Seasonally, Advent marks the start of our year, the beginning. We go from Advent to Christmas to Epiphany to Lent to Easter to Pentecost to the common season and back again to Advent. This is where we start. We come into the season of our faith through Advent, a time of preparation. This is where we get ready for what is about to happen. This is where we get prepared for what is coming. This is where we look ahead, not just to the Christ in the manger, but to the Christ on the cross, to the empty tomb, to the risen Christ, to the Christ in our lives. And we know that it all starts here, in this unassuming place, in this unassuming way. We come to this season as Christians, as disciples, as followers, to remember and celebrate the beginning. We come to this season seeking that miraculous transformation of faith once more. We come to encounter the Christ. Because this moment, this occurrence happens at the beginning. It's a special time of reintroduction to our faith. We come back around here again because this is familiar. This is home. This is where our faith began. And so if we've been away from it for an hour, for a day, for a week, for a year, for many years, this moment, the coming of Christ into our lives, gives us the opportunity to connect with Christ once again, with our faith again, with our journey again. When we approach this time of preparation, we come in many different ways. We come in many different forms to this moment. We take on the qualities and the roles of the characters in this story as we approach the quiet night in Bethlehem when everything will change. We know the characters well, of course. We've read the story, whether it was just last year at this time or several years. We remember the story. These characters, the angels, the parents, the innkeeper, the shepherds, all inform our interaction with the babe in the manger. Let us look closer at their role in the story that we might understand our role in this story better. Today our scripture tells us that the angel comes. In the first chapter of Luke, the angel Gabriel is sent by God to Mary. He comes to Mary with great news. News that any teenager wants to hear. Surprise, you're pregnant. He comes to prepare Mary for what's about to happen. Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you. Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God, and now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give to him the throne of his ancestor, David. He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. In Scripture, angels are often employed as heralds to announce something that is going to happen. The bearers of news. Later in our story, we'll encounter the angels again as they announce the coming of Christ to the first witnesses, the shepherds. But here there is one lone angel, the angel Gabriel. He comes to Mary and says, Mary, you are pregnant. And Mary says, ooh, I don't know that that's a good thing. And Gabriel goes, no, it is. Matter of fact, not only is it good, it is great. He'll be the Son of God. And you're going to name him Jesus. Takes one more thing off her to-do list there. Doesn't have to worry about naming it. When we look at the angel's role in the story, it's to get people ready. When Gabriel comes to Mary, it's to get her ready for the task at hand. She will be the mother of Jesus. She needs to prepare herself, not just for the 9 months of pregnancy, not just for the cultural and societal scorn that will be upon her because of her condition, but she has to be ready to raise this child. Jesus doesn't come out fully formed, Son of God, ready to go. For 30 years, this woman will be his mother. She will care for him and love him, correct him, encourage him. She will shape him greatly into the man that he will become. And she has to get ready for it. She's going to need faith to get through this. Get ready for it, Mary. She's going to need strength to get through this. Get ready for it, Mary. She's going to need courage to get through this. Get ready for it, Mary. Jesus is going to need to be cared for and loved and raised and ready. And much of that's going to fall on this teenager's shoulders. Get ready, Mary. Everything is about to change. Later on in our story, when the angels return again, they're still getting people ready. Joseph begins to get cold feet. Now, that makes Joseph sound bad. Sometimes that casts him in a bad light. But he's an honorable man. He's wanting to protect Mary. He knows that she's getting a lot of scorn because she was pregnant before they were married. He knows that doesn't look good. Right? People say the things that people say. Right? If Mary was a teenage girl today that was pregnant and unmarried, we would have terms for her. We would have names that we would call her. Those same names existed 2,000 years ago. Mary is feeling that scorn. So Joseph feels bad. He says, you know, if I break off the engagement, at least then she won't be an engaged woman who's pregnant. She'll just be a teenager. Maybe I can take away one piece of that scorn if I just quietly slip out the back door. And then one night while he's asleep in a dream, the angel comes to him and says, no, 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 no. We need you. Mary needs you. God needs you. Jesus, by the way, that's your son's name. Jesus needs you. Don't go anywhere. We need you in this story. It's an amazing turnaround for Joseph. Joseph is one of my favorite people in the Christmas story. And don't get me wrong. Mary's amazing. The strength of Mary is inspirational. This young girl accepts this burden that God places on her, and she stands up and she grabs a hold of it with both hands, and she is amazing. But Joseph is the one who chooses to be here. Joseph has a choice. He can slip out the back door and be nothing but a footnote. But he stays. He hangs around. Jesus is his foster son, his adopted son. He's not his. Mary at least has a biological connection to this child. Joseph has none. Mary has those instinctual, physical, maternal instincts that come with bearing a child in childbirth. Joseph doesn't have that connection. Joseph chooses Jesus. He's the first person in the Bible that chooses Jesus. He says, I'm going to stay. The angel says, I need you to get ready because we need you to be a dad. Right? God is his father, but he needs a dad. He needs somebody to teach him how to play catch. Right? He needs somebody to get on him when he's doing wrong. We need somebody that's going to be an example for him of what a man is like. We need somebody that's going to be a role model. We need somebody that's going to guide and shape this child into the man that he's going to be. And we need you to stay there for that. We need you to get ready. You got to gird up. And Joseph says, I'll stay. And he marries Mary, and they raise Jesus together. And then much later, again, the angels come back, this time in chorus, to awaken the shepherds to the coming of Christ, the shepherds who are called on to be the first witnesses, to proclaim to the world what has just happened. Get ready for it, the angelic masses proclaim in boisterous melody. Everything is about to change. This is the role that the angels fill. They are preparers. They're telling the people in the story, get ready. Get yourselves ready because this is about to happen. Everything is about to change. We come to the manger as the angels at this time of year. We are now the ones trying to get the world ready for Jesus to come. Get ready. He is coming. Everything is about to change. That's our role now. We are preparing. We are getting ready. My family and I were blessed during my sabbatical time to be able to do some traveling. I told you about going to Denver. My wife and I also went to New England for 2 weeks, which was amazing. And just over Thanksgiving, my wife's whole family went with us down to Galveston, Texas, to spend some time on the beach. Whenever we would get ready to go on one of these trips over these last 4 months, you know, my wife has a full-time and then some job. And my daughter and her boyfriend are in school full-time, and they have part-time jobs. And I had less on my plate than they did. So when it came time to these trips would come up, they would all look to me, well, you've got to get us ready. Right? And it's hard to argue when it's 10 o'clock and you're still in your pajamas. Right? 10 o'clock p.m. Right? It's hard to come up with a good argument for why I can't be the one to get us ready. So I would get us ready. I would get the suitcases out, and I would make the list of what we need to have with us, and what do we need to pack, and what do we need to put in here, and what do we not want to forget? What do you not want to be 1,000 miles away from home without, right? And I had to make that list and check it off, and we put the things in the bag, and we pack the things, and we get ready to go. And my family's glad that I not only like doing it, but that I'm good at it in getting us ready for these trips. I'll give you an example. We got to Galveston, Texas. And the first day we were there, we weren't there 12 hours. My daughter's boyfriend comes walking in, stubbed his toe on something, and he'd ripped half the nail. It was like standing straight up. And for those of you who don't know my wife and daughter, they are worthless in this situation. Worthless. All righty? If it had been me, I would have been banishing myself. Luckily, Evan has me, and I tell him all the time how lucky he is to have me. Because I opened up my suitcase, and what had I packed? Nail clippers. My wife said, why would you bring nail clippers? And I said, because we might need them. Right? You get ready to go on that trip, you get ready, you get prepared. There's an anxiety, there's an anxiousness that comes over us, that anticipation of what's coming. Right? As we were getting ready for those trips, I would get so excited, and I would pack the suitcase, and I'd get it ready, and I'd force it closed, and I'd zip it up, right? And I'd go back over my list again. See, I was so excited about what was about to happen. This season of Advent breaks upon us in the twilight of this year, and we are now thrust into the role of angels. We come to the manger this season as heralds, telling the world to get ready. Everything is about to change. As we go about the machinations of this month, are we preparing for what is about to happen? Are we getting ourselves ready for the coming of the Christ child once again? Are we getting others ready for this moment to occur? Are we preparing? Who are you helping to know that Christmas is coming? Get ready. We who have touched grace, who have been touched and transformed by the coming of the Christ, we who have seen what this moment means, we are the ones who now must prepare the way. We have heard what the kingdom of God is going to look like. The scriptures tell us it is a time of peace. It is a time of grace. And it is up to us to get ready. How do we prepare for this? How do we get ready? Inviting someone to bring their kid to the Christmas shop? Inviting a neighbor or a family member or a friend to come to Christmas Eve to our candlelight service? Or maybe just, you know, maybe getting ready this season is just about being aware of the people in your life for whom this season is a struggle. I love Christmas. I do. Christmas is my favorite time of the year. I have 8 Christmas trees decorated in my house. 8. And the only reason I don't have 10 is because those 2 are in my daughter's part of the house. And she won't let me decorate them. Or I'd have 10 decorated. I love Christmas. I love this time of year. It is colorful and blinking and sparkly and it's amazing. But even as I say that, I'm cognizant of the fact that there are many people who struggle with this season, that it's not the season of joy that it's meant to be, that it's a season of grief. Facing that first Christmas without a loved one. Are we looking around our life? Are we seeing those people for whom this season is not the season of joy? And are we reaching out? Are we holding their hand to walk through this season? Are we praying with them? Are we praying for them? Are we saying, hey, you know, I know this is going to be hard. Take my hand. I'll walk it with you. What are we doing to prepare for the coming of the Christ child? Advent is upon us. The time of preparation. As we get ready for the Christ to break forth into our darkness once more, for the light to break anew on the horizon. This season is a time to get ready, to prepare our hearts to receive Jesus. What will you do to get ready? What will you do to prepare? Get ready for it. Everything is about